Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health and the environment. In response to a dangerous political environment likely to accelerate climate change, we've been concentrating on what citizens can do in their lives and in their communities to make things better on a local level. We can't wait for our government to do the right thing. We just have to start doing things sustainably and humanely for ourselves. Many cities and local governments are working to protect immigrants, workers' rights, and women's health, along with maintaining natural spaces, parks, and safe, ethically raised food. So many movements to join. But what about just getting out? Of course, it's not possible to quarantine yourself from what's happening around you, but it may be possible to have more control over your environment, energy production, and food living closer to nature. You may also have an opportunity to trade and cooperate with like-minded neighbors to produce the things you will need to be more self-sustaining. And if that isn't enough, you will also be in a position to protect and steward a piece of this precious planet and its creatures. Join us today to hear how a woman and her daughter are doing just that. Join us now for Getting Out. And let me tell you who is joining us actually in our home studio. Welcome to you both. Demetra Marcus is a licensed acupuncturist, herbalist, and musician who has been providing accessible holistic health services for the last decade. She founded Yerba Buena Community Acupuncture in San Francisco, served as executive director for a national community acupuncture cooperative, and continues to mentor acupuncturists and others interested in providing economically accessible health care. She currently offers sliding scale mobile acupuncture services in her rural community and educates herbalists about land stewardship and biological plant medicine, bioregional plant medicine, while taking time to sing in several local musical projects. Welcome, Demetra.
Thank you, Lena. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And her daughter, Lily, who we had a discussion about whether she's 12 or 13, but she's going to be so close to 13 by the time this airs that we will say Lily, age 13, has been a self-directed unschooler since the age of 9. She's a dedicated photographer and fiction writer and is currently working on her second young adult novel. Her chosen studies include animal behavior, psychology, history of the world of World War II era, and archery, as well as standard seventh grade subjects. Lily has online friends around the globe with whom she connects over subjects as diverse as U.S. politics, religion, and Korean pop. She's responsible for a flock of over 50 laying hens and is an expert goat milker. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. So, as she puts down her outline here. I'm just wondering how long you knew, both of you maybe, but particularly starting with Demetra, because you're the one that uprooted the two of you out of the city. How long did you know that you wanted to live in a natural environment?
Well, when I got pregnant with Lily, I was studying herbal medicine up near Mount Shasta. And I returned to San Francisco to be with her father, my partner at the time. But that, to me, was a temporary step, and my ultimate goal was always to return to living in a rural setting. But as the nature of, you know, life goes, you get sort of drawn into doing other things. I went to acupuncture school. I opened my clinic and found 15 years in the city going by and realized, you know, as Lily was getting older and wanting to spend more time climbing trees and the forest, that was reflecting my own desires. And finally, it just became, as the situation in San Francisco changed economically and community-wise, it just seemed more and more the time was right to make the change.
So, Lily, you preferred not to be in the city? Were you unhappy in the city?
Well, I liked certain aspects, you know, museums and, you know, the botanical gardens and just, you know, the culture. It was really wonderful, but I didn't like, you know, how urban it all was, which is kind of the point of cities, and I just, yeah, I really didn't want to be there anymore. I don't mind visiting, but being in it was just not good for me anymore.
Yeah, my favorite thing is to be able to pop into the city to go to the museums and then pop out.
Yeah.
But, living in it. So, you know, I can only imagine what your urban friends said when you were separating a marriage and carting your child off to a remote ranch.
Yeah, there were, you know, there was a real wide array of responses. Some people, a couple of my oldest friends were like, it's about time. You know, we kind of saw this coming a long time ago, and we're proud of you for living out your dreams, and we're really supportive, and also a little like, wow, I wish I, you know, could do what you're doing right now. A lot of other people were like, really? Why? And what are you thinking? And there was a few folks that indicated they thought I was making a selfish choice. Which was hard, but I mean, this is just real, you know, this is how relationships can be sometimes, you know,
But did you explain that Lily also wasn't happy living in the city? Or?
Well, I got some of those questions myself. I had some very awkward conversations with some of my parents' friends a few times where they said, I think because they were my dad's friends first, and then, you know, as I was born and, you know, you got married, they became your friends as well. It kind of, you know, I think they still felt like it was kind of selfish of both of us, which was a bit uncomfortable.
Does your husband feel like it was selfish?
No, he was always extremely supportive.
Yeah, it's my impression.
Yeah. I'm grateful for our relationship in the sense that our mutual shared value has always been supporting the other and being true to their goals. And, you know, as it became clearer and clearer that those goals had diverged from being a mutual life path, he was understanding about that. It was painful for both of us, but it was just true.
It is interesting how scary the idea of doing this is to people. When we were talking about this to other people, we were talking about building a house.
Mm-hmm.
And people were so comfortable sharing the sort of these banalities about what happens when you build a house. Not that there might not be some truth to them, but everyone said, oh, well, you know, that's the best way to break up a marriage and things like that. And, oh, living out in the country, well, you know. And then after we moved, too, there's these constant comments about, wow, you're way out there. And
yeah.
My response has always been on purpose.
Right.
That was the idea, being way out there. So there's also a myth, when I got here, there is also a funny little myth among people who have lived in rural environments for a long time. Like people from there, we live among people who are part of the back to land movement from the 70s. And so they've been out here for 40 years and whatnot. And when you first move, they have a tendency to say things to you like, oh, well, you know, that's life in the country. It's hard to live in the country. It's hard. And I was always saying to them, Do you have any idea how hard it is to live in the city? I mean, what you have to put, I mean, you have to plan ahead when you live in the country, but you can't just go out and get something that you need immediately. It's a little more of a drive, but the inconvenience of the city is constant and oppressive in many ways for some of us.
It's true. I think we become accustomed to making compromises to what our needs are based on what's available to us. You know, in the city, I expended a ton of energy in trying to be in a natural setting as much as I could, you know, getting up early to show and try and find a place where I could watch the sunset, or the sunrise, I mean, in an urban setting. Here, it's like I don't even have to try. All I have to do is literally open the door, sometimes not even that, because I live in a yurt and nature often finds its way in.
It does. No matter where you live,
being able to be in the woods, be in the trees, be surrounded by birds and animals and plants without even having to try is a massive benefit that, you know, overwhelms any perceived inconveniences of distance and time.
Lily, did you find that you had to let go of some things that you really liked, or you just made this change and it was like never look back? You just felt
it was very abrupt for me, you know. I wanted to move, but then suddenly we were moving. It kind of felt like that. And there were definitely some parts that I had to get used to not being able to. It was mostly just about the luxuries of living in a city. Like, it's easy to access, like, food of all kinds and go anywhere you want to, and just, you know, you can, and you see people everywhere. It was kind of just a very big change to suddenly be in this quiet and not very crowded place at all. I liked it, but it was very abrupt for me.
And now?
Now I feel quite used to it. It feels strange to be in, like, a town or city now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me too. Okay, so it occurs to me that making a life change like this is similar to deciding to become self-employed. And of course, it's easier to do if you're self-employed because you have, it's true. If, there are people who live out here who commuted for like 20 years or whatever, and they just made the drive. So let's talk about what it was like to plan and put this together. What did you use for resources? What did you look at? What were the considerations that you were?
It took a lot of planning. I had founded the clinic that's still going in the city, and so there was the consideration of how does a clinic continue without my daily presence and management. So there was some time spent creating a different management system and then taking on a partner and eventually moving out of daily operations. And then there was the where am I going and how am I going to afford to get there. And I knew that money was an object. Money is not something I have in a lot of resource. So I spent some time saving what I could. I was able to save several thousand dollars, but my goal was to live in a place where I could essentially use my my ability to work as currency, and like I wasn't coming out of the city with the ability to buy a house or buy land or build a house. So I essentially used my imagination and as much of my community as possible. I let people know that I was looking to live outside of the city within 3 hours of the Bay Area, that I was hoping to do a work exchange on land. I joined several land trusts because I felt like I might meet people who had access to land and needed assistance.
Did that work? Is that what finally got you where you are?
Yeah, that was it was at a local land trust meeting that I started to talk to people at the meeting and connected with someone who I told them, I would like to basically live on land, offer my help in maintaining a home and be able to raise my daughter, raise food and grow medicinal plants. Through that, I was invited to submit my bio to a local email exchange, and through that ultimately got the invitation to live where I'm living now.
Yeah, I think there's some confusion about what it takes to live in nature and live in a remote place. In fact, in some ways, it's easier if you don't want to buy and build a house. It's easier to find a place to live. It's easier to find rentals. And it's often the case that people who live on larger pieces of lands have additional spaces for people to live, and the rentals are often quite affordable. Right. So there's a kind of mythology about what it takes to do this, and I think people misunderstand that it is possible. And in addition, there's a real movement among young people. I mean, there are different groups out here. There's people who are our age, who are sort of retirement age and older, who moved here in the 70s, and then there's people who are kind of the next generation in their 40s, whatever. And then there's some very young people who are out here. And oddly enough, it strikes me, too, that there's more work opportunities out here than anybody actually realizes. Yeah? What are you noticing about that?
Well, I just see that there's a lot of, if there's... Whenever there are people who are younger up here, there's always so many people who are like, oh, we have we need this to be taken care of. We have all these things that you could help us do. Like, there is really a lot of work.
Yeah.
And when you're outside of the city, your community has to provide a lot of its own infrastructure resources. And so if you're willing to be a provider of those, then you'll have as much as work as you want. I think that's definitely true.
I just want to let people know this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is standing by with the equipment. We're doing a show called Getting Out, and I'm interviewing Demetra Marcus and her daughter Lily, who have done just that, who have left a very, very pleasant neighborhood in San Francisco and moved out to a yurt on a remote piece of property and are flourishing, I think. Looks that way to me. The additional thing about the work is that because there are different generations of people out here, there's going to be things that people need. And certainly one of the things that you're doing is providing that, which is some alternative form of health care and a form of health care that traditionally kind of rebalances people and helps them figure out how to stay on their feet and stay balanced. So the style of health care that you're providing is really appropriate for out here.
Well, what drew me to acupuncture was that it was such an effective tool, and yet it was such so simple to provide, low technology, you know, not at all difficult to bring into any kind of setting.
So why don't you describe how you set up your practice? Because it's very difficult to work your way into an environment like this and start.
Yeah, well, mostly what I did was spend some time finding out what it is people wanted in terms of services, what they were interested in having me do. What my work has always been in community, so I provide acupuncture in a group setting for a low cost, and I'm working with some local resources for finding a space to do that where people can come to a central location. For example, a local school, we're in discussion about providing acupuncture there on a weekly basis. But what I found was that people needed the flexibility to just kind of be like, hey, I fell off my ladder while I was picking olives, or, you know, I really overdid it with the weed whacker, which is typical complaints. And, you know, can you swing by my house sometime in the next few days? You know, I'll have my husband there too, or whatever. And that has worked out really well, because it allows for, you know, just a natural schedule to develop. And living rurally, you don't necessarily have a fixed rhythm to your day. You kind of have to do what needs to be done each day. And so having the flexibility to schedule things as they come up for both parties seems to work really well.
Well, in addition, you very cleverly gave everybody the option to do a sliding scale. And this isn't an affluent area. When you look to move into a remote area, you're likely to find affordable property or rentals or whatever in areas that are underpopulated. And underpopulated areas are not usually extremely affluent communities. But oddly, in my experience, and you told me you had the same, people who are not affluent tend to be more generous financially than people who are. So giving people a sliding scale is sort of the honor system, and it allows them to feel and give as much as they
want. Yeah, it gives people an opportunity to do what they can afford. It gives me an ability to be flexible. And really what I'm building here is a network and a community that is of mutual reliance. You know, what I get from people is their trust, and they share that my services with their neighbors and their friends. That's, you know, I haven't really had to do any kind of outreach at all. And people do it for me, which is a huge time saver and a big relief to me to have those connections to new patients.
It's also, you also get the best people that way, too. It's really astonishing. I mean, you can market. It's usually word of mouth that works the best. I neglected to ask you about what your considerations were in choosing a piece of property, because that's an important thing to think about, is where, if you're going to get out. I mean, I've had people call me and say, well, you did it. You moved out, and I'm trying to figure out where to go. I want to get out. I don't know. Should I move to Hawaii? And I said, well, if you love it, because you can, it's guaranteed that no matter what you do, there'll be disappointments in what you do. There'll be things that you'll say, oh, wow, I, you know, didn't realize that, but it's still worth it. I'm still glad. So, but you have to love it in order to do that. It's like any other situation where you can tolerate it best if you're in love.
It's true. I did initially consider returning to upstate New York, which is where I grew up. But ultimately, my work as an herbalist has been in this bioregion, and I love it. I love this land, all of Northern California, really. It's vastly diverse, but it's beautiful. And, you know, I was concerned early on in moving, and we were in the midst of that terrible drought, you know, which is likely to persist in some form or another for our lifetimes.
In some areas.
Yeah, in some areas especially. And I was concerned, like, can I live in a place where there's not a lot of water? But doing permaculture training and working with my local community who are more familiar with the climate and its adaptations have allowed me to see that, yes, you know, I can do anything that I want to do, raise food, raise animals, and grow medicinal plants in any kind of climate as long as I'm willing to be flexible and adapt. So ultimately staying within my home bioregion, you know, that I know as an herbalist became my prime consideration.
You know, both of you, as far as I can tell, maybe start with Lily, have experienced some dramatic health benefits from moving away from the city. Lily, what's your favorite thing about moving away from the city and living in nature? What is it about how you feel, just how how you feel?
Well, I mean, I used to be it's very loud and crowded in the city, and that used to make me kind of anxious, where it's very peaceful up here, which I like. I mean, in its own way, there are other things that happen.
Like what?
Well, I mean, it can be kind of stressful to take care of animals, but it's also really something I enjoy, so it's just, you know, something you have to put up with. But there's none of the, like, you know, traffic or, you know, crowds in the city, which I really appreciate.
So you, but you notice that you feel not only calmer, but better, just sort of better physically?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there's, the city's become quite an environment in a number of ways that it would agitate you more, not just the traffic, I think, but... and Dimitri, you've had some very dramatic health benefits.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't even know how much stronger I've gotten. The first year that I was here, you know, was definitely pushing my limits of what I was able to do. And now at 40, I feel stronger, healthier, more flexible, more adaptable than I did at 30. Absolutely, I never get colds. You know, I sleep really well. You know, I have a great appetite. I'm strong. I'm fit. I feel really great. You know, I'm happy that I don't actually have to think about those things. Like, I don't have to plan time for exercise because my lifestyle is inherently exercise.
Yeah, you're carting around.
I went to the doctor, 50. And I was. They were like, "How often do you exercise?" And I was like 7 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm digging garden beds. I'm carrying 5 gallon buckets of manure. Like that stuff, you know, you're just part of your day.
I love the 50 pound bags of hand scratch.
Yeah. Well, I think I've become stronger too. Cause I mean, it's still, you know, I do have to do some of that stuff too, you know, cart things back and forth or get wood or, and move grain around as well. So it's nice kind of to feel a lot more stronger and a lot, you know, like I'm more capable now, which is nice.
Were you surprised, Lily, by how companioning, how sweet chickens are?
Well, I wouldn't call them sweet.
They're not all sweet.
Yeah.
Some of them are. I've had chickens that you can like pick up and you can
I think it's about how much you domesticate them though when they're very young. I mean, with ours we have so many that you can't really individually take each one and then
they don't want to be,
you know,
picked up necessarily.
Yeah. But I mean, I do really like them, but for me, I really liked our goats and sheep, too.
Oh,
we
yes.
Them.
Yeah, well, they'll be coming back,
yeah.
I think, yes.
And I mean, I'm interested in other animals, wild animals, but it's really fun to observe all these different animals.
Well,
poultry and
we have some incredible wildlife out
here. Yeah.
So what have you interacted with or seen and liked
well,
and learned from? And
I haven't, I mean, I've seen a couple coyotes and foxes, and then there's all the birds. And then there's two deer who kind of hang out around. I see them almost every day when I do chores. I'm kind of growing. We have a friendship now.
Yeah, they do. They get used to you. It's not like some parts of California where the deer are so ubiquitous that they don't even pay attention. You know, they go into people's yards and they don't get scared. These are a little more skittish. But, yeah, we have a lot of wildlife out here. And you learn a lot about that, too, because there's some predation.
You have to deal with that. Well, that's where it gets a little hard because you both love your animals, your domesticated animals, and also the wildlife. And you understand why the wildlife is, you know, the predator, but you also want to protect your animals, so it gets kind of difficult.
And we had a vixen and some pups that put a den in down here. And so periodically I would take an egg and leave it for her. And it was nice, and she'd come, and I'd hear her calling her babies. It was very nice. I want to, you know, in the next section, particularly, we can start now. I want to talk about unschooling a bit, because this is really watching you do this has been. We did shows with Dr. Peter Grave about unschooling, and basically at its core, you can tell me if you agree with this, the student is directing their own learning, and although you have support and resources from adults, they don't get to tell you what to go toward or what to learn or how to learn. You get to choose the way you're going to do it, and I understand also that, I mean, you're very self-motivated, and that's, as far as I can see, when they've studied and followed up on unschooled students, they find them to be really good at finding their own resources. They understand how to learn. They know how to find what they need to prepare themselves, even if they move on to a formal university education. And they tend to be much more successful in their education in later life than the general population. So... I don't know what it's like for other students. There are people out here who are homeschooling their kids, And that's very different. You are just, every time I call, you're doing schoolwork. You're just there.
Yeah, I mean, I have like different, for me, the lack of, you know, a constant adult supervision is, you know, both really wonderful and sometimes not the best because I don't always feel motivated, and sometimes I need to, you know, be more motivated. But, or like, there's one subject I'm doing really well in, and then I do that a lot, and then I, you know, kind of don't push away the other subjects. But for the most part, I do try and stay on top of things because I would like to be at, you know, the traditional grade level that, you know, my peers in formal education are at too. But I still want to also explore subjects that are, you know, less traditional. So it's kind of a mix.
Well, that brings up a question for you, Demetria, which is what did you have to do something with the authorities? How did you set this up?
So well, what's wonderful about...
What are the laws?
Yeah, homeschooling in general in California. California is a very supportive state. There's also great communities that have been built both around traditional formal homeschooling as well as the unschooling world, both in the state of California and nationally and internationally. So there's a lot of resources available that I availed myself of so that I knew what I was doing. But one of, you know, there's a number of things you can do in California in terms of managing bureaucracy. You can file your own private school affidavit. That's a simple, you know, single document procedure. You file it every year where basically you say you have your own private school at home.
And you don't have to prove anything to do that?
You're required to offer all subjects that would be offered in a standard school setting, but the student doesn't have to take them. And you have to keep records of attendance. So you note down every day that your child has learned something. As of yet, Lily has not missed a single day of school. The other options are to coordinate with a private or public charter school independent study program, wherein you basically have the resource of a teacher who can help you, you know, and be as formal as informal as you like. We've just started doing that in Sonoma County this year because Lily has wanted more more support than I am willing, I mean, not willing, able, able to provide her as one person. And so this has worked out really well for us. We're using curriculum of our choice, and the teacher is there as an additional resource. Help us organize things. They do accredit what we do so that if she chooses to pursue more traditional schooling in high school or college, we'll have records that I don't have to manage.
You do end up with some kind of transcripts, basically.
But they still allow me, you know, I was able to pick up like an eighth grade English book and a, you know, a ninth grade zoology book when I'm in seventh grade, which is really nice. They still let me kind of jump around and, you know, focus on things I'm really interested in and more passionate about, which is nice. So I still have that freedom.
Well, in unschooling tradition, if the student wants to spend all day long collecting guppies out of the creek, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is that, Demetria, you and I still went through, I think, traditional public schooling, and Jeffrey too. And it was, I mean, I don't know about you, but it was deadening for me. I mean, I was a terrible student. I was not interested in anything that was going on. There was no motivation for the teachers were very eccentric and weird. And the program, the textbooks, the information was banal. I mean, it was, and I knew it even then.
It's unnatural to divide life into subjects that are addressed in 50-minute increments. That's just not how the human beings, that's not how nature is. You know, nature doesn't say this tree is a biological organism, but it's also a social one. You know, it's also a historical one. Like, how do you separate those things out? And why should we?
Well, and who gets to decide what information is true?
Right.
So to reassure you, Lily, from what I understand from interviewing people who are involved in the unschooling movement, the students who did whatever they wanted to do that didn't try to comply to what formal education wanted them to learn and become proficient, so you say you're really fascinated by this but not so much by that when they were faced with the possibility of going to a public university or college, they had no trouble figuring out how to get up to speed. They knew exactly how to learn and how to find the resources, and they got up to speed really fast. We need to take a very brief musical break. We have here with us in our home studio Demetria Marcus and her daughter Lily, and we're doing a show I'm calling Getting Out, and it's talking about life in a more sustainable style, in a kind of and unschooling, all of that, all of the above. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this brief break. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. We are doing a show today. We're calling Getting Out. I'm talking with Demetra Marcus and her daughter Lily about moving away from big urban city, living in a remote rural area, and doing homeschooling and how to live more sustainably. We've been talking... I should also say that... You can visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. For easier extended access to our over 600 archive shows with our library card feature, free stream of this week's show, and there's more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. If you want to reach us, please do it by email. It's admin, A-D-M-I-N, at yourownhealthandfitness.org. So we were talking about this issue of how formal your education has to be when you're doing unschooling. And I don't know, does that make you feel better to know that no matter how you choose to do it, that it might be all right for you to follow what you feel passionate?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, because I do think I want to, as I've said, I'm very fascinated by animal behavior, and I do think I might want to go to an actual university or college and, you know, really study it. And so, you know, it's nice, but, you know, you have to be proficient in many subjects to get into that. But I think it would be easy to catch up because I have my own time and I can, you know, really go through a lot of things if I want to. It's not like school where there's a lot of review and there's a lot of time spent making a class quiet down before you can actually teach them anything.
Or just rote memorization. Yeah. Which is, it turns out, that, I don't know, let me know if you agree, that my experience is that the people who did well in school did well because they learned how to, as Jeffrey's daughter once said when she was a little girl, what she learned in school was how to be quiet, how to take tests, how to sit down, how to stand in line, and how to take tests.
I was a test killer. I got great test grades all through school, you know, all the way through, SATs, everything. And honestly, when I graduated, I felt absolutely lost. I didn't know how to manage my own time, my own daily schedule. I didn't know what I was interested in anymore because I had lost the ability to pursue my interests. And it took a lot of time to place myself back on a path that had meaning for me. And so it's really important to see that in making the choice to allow Lily to self-direct her life, that she's thriving. Like, it's an utter joy.
Yeah.
You know, is it without conflict? Of course not. There's no life without conflict. Life without conflict would be very boring. And, you know, we have challenges and we have conflicts, but ultimately all of the things we're doing feel meaningful to both of us. And so that is very rewarding.
So the conflicts are just the usual conflicts between a mother and her adolescent, almost to be adolescent daughter?
Generally, you know, that sort of thing.
Things or, like, you hate me, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Why are you mad at me? I'm not. I'm mad at, you know, the chickens or whatever. Sorry, chickens. Basically, you know, there's no life that comes without any kind of challenge or like, oh no, what do I do now this moment? Or, oh, I have a problem and I need to solve it. Like, moving out to the country hasn't removed that aspect from my life, but the surrounding sort of environment in which I live is so supportive and so full of beauty that it makes dealing with those other things just much more meaningful.
Well, I think if there's enough quietude, if there's enough solitude, even in the midst of activity, mm-hmm. which is part of the joy of living around nature, and also the sense of companionship of everything that's alive around you. I think what happens is that you're at the core of who you are more.
Exactly.
And you're operating from that place instead of being sort of pulled out in different directions, you know, which is very confusing and very exhausting, I think. So, Lily, you think that you may want to continue living rurally after this experience, or you want to go off and I mean, you're kind of, you don't get a chance to sort of hang out a lot, except maybe the occasional times on social media. Well, not social media, but you have contact with people outside of the
yeah.
area. And I guess you do visit your father occasionally, too.
Yeah.
So, but do you feel isolated out here?
Well, I might like to, you know, I'm thinking about other options for, you know, high school and all that. And I might be nice to interact with people my own age more often. And I'm definitely thinking about, you know, what I'd like to do later on. But I don't feel exactly isolated because, yeah.
I never feel isolated yeah. out here. Yeah. There's too much life out here to feel isolated. Talk about what you're working on.
Oh, well, right now I'm working on my second novel. They're not related to each other, really, but they're both fantasy. This one I did for National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, in November, and I'm still working on it, though. It's currently at 80,000 words, and it's quite fun to write. I'm just trying to enjoy it without being too stressed or editing it as I go.
No, I think Jeffrey would agree that it's better not to. Jeffrey doesn't have a microphone, which is why you can't hear him. He'll have to yell across the table to be heard. But Jeffrey's a writer, so he's looking like, yes, I understand that. Did you bring something to read?
No, not ready.
So can you tell us a little bit about the story? What it is? Well, because you've written like 250 pages, you said, or something.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
About that. It's quite complex. I'm not really sure where everything is going at the moment, but the idea is an alternative fantasy universe that is very similar to, you know, this life, but, you know, there's Earth, but everything's a little different, and then there are 14 other planets in the solar system, and it kind of takes place on one of those planets that is, you know, dealing with its own problems and follows three characters whose lives are kind of intertwined.
I want to ask you a difficult question, and I, you know, you can talk about as much or as little as you want on this mm-hmm. topic, but there's a lot going on politically and environmentally,
yeah.
you know, right now. And I always think about you because of that. Because you're
yeah.
just starting, and you're such a bright, star. You know, I just, you guys can't see her. She's both these women are very lovely and beautiful. But how are you feeling about all of this? As much of it as you can let in.
Well, I think as a young person, I don't quite realize the severity of it that older people do who have seen more. You know, it doesn't totally sink in for me as much. But I find it very, you know. Intimidating, but more like just very annoying and like angering.
I do too.
Angering mostly because, yeah, and I think it has reflected on my writing because there is definitely a lot of like political issues in this world I'm writing about. And I mean, I'm definitely aware of that stuff and I try to be very aware of it because I think it's important to know what's going on. And I'm definitely worried about it, but I like to take more of a, you know, like a fight against it perspective than, you know, look at the pessimistic view of it.
Yeah, I think that's important.
I think it's important.
Yeah, I have a sneeze that's trying to come out and it's not coming out. What about you, Demetra, in the face of this and your daughter and stuff? I mean, part of the decision that you made when you chose in your planning, you were thinking as you were planning to move, where to move that might be safe.
Well, what feels safe to me is to have community, and community that is really will show up for each other. You know, in San Francisco, I lived there for 15 years. You know, due to the housing crisis, I saw a lot of my community members move because they had to, and a lot of my immediate neighborhood change, and realized that, you know, much kind as and friendly as people might be, they simply couldn't be the kind of community that I wanted, because I wanted a sense of rootedness and permanence. And I feel very lucky that I feel that I found that where I live now. Where I live, a lot of the community that have been here have gone through some very difficult times, including like a catastrophic wildfire in the late 70s, the Creighton Ridge Fire, that really the people who remained had to make choices about how they would operate as a community to keep themselves and their homes and each other safe. And, you know, by no means is it a utopia in which everyone loves each other without question, but people have... they have a shared value of, like, we want to thrive in this place, and we know we need each other to do it. And that, for me, is exactly what I was looking for. And in the short 2 years that I've been here, I found that people have been really open and willing to meet with me and be helpful to me, to offer me resources, and to just, you know, to show up if I have a leak, if I have a propane issue. I feel that I can ask people for help. I feel that there's a sense of mutual exchange. I have a lot of wood. I need a wood splitter. I call my neighbor who has a wood splitter. He lends me the splitter. I fill his truck with wood. You know, like, I feel this sense of, like, okay, we can...
Who has a wood splitter?
I'll tell you later.
Tell me later who has the wood splitter.
But, you know, like, where people will show up, you know, and help each other out. There's a really strong volunteer fire department and emergency services responders. You know, it's not easy to choose to do that, and yet a lot of people do. I find a lot of inspiration in that personally, and I intend to actually pursue emergency services training as well, so that I can provide first responder.
That would be very good. They haven't had a woman on the fire. They have one, but not.
No, they have several. They have several. Different ranches.
Oh, different ranches. Yeah, this is. Yeah. We're in an area where there are, I think, three main. Mm-hmm. Ranch associations that were like huge ranches that were broken up into 40-acre parcels. It's interesting because your sense of community is different from mine. Moving here as someone who is who has spent most of my early life in urban and rural settings, but pursued a career until I got to the point where I was successfully self-employed. It's different for different people in terms of managing that issue, but as we've said, there's work out here. But you come in here to this environment, and I've seen you because of your, your personality, for one thing. You're inclusive, that you've been able to really, people really respond to you, and it gives me heart. I mean, we had situations come up when we first started building and had some crises and things. People really did come. There were people who really came through for us in a really wonderful way. And yes, we chose a community that we had heard was a good community. And we also chose because the physical environment seems like it will be, we hope, less impacted by climate change. It looks like our water. I didn't want to tell you where we are either. I'm not going to say. No. Anyway, it's just it's something to consider when you're moving, is where is the weather changing? How is it changing? What are the resources and what are the people? So,
but in terms of as a response to, you know, political and climate change, to me, community feels like resilience, because there's no, life happens, and sometimes some of us have more individual resources than others, and other times we're tapped out and we can't help out, you know, and the more people you have in your network, the stronger the web is, so that when some people are not available to help, or someone else might be, you know, and when you're in need of, and you need to take a step back, there's other people there, and you don't have to feel like structures are fragile and that they're going to crumble without one person's participation. And to me, that's resilience, and that's how we co-create alternatives to what the government might be failing to provide for us, you know. Lily and I have been spending a lot of time listening to Hamilton the musical and being inspired by, you know, the original visions of the founding fathers, and how those are reflected in a modern reinterpretation and telling of that story. And I do think that one of the, you know, the things that sort of feeds our culture is the idea that, like, we create our government, we create our world, our country together. And whether or not we have the government we want right now, we can still do that as individuals in a family setting, and as small as a few friends, or, you know, if we're lucky, in our physical neighborhoods.
Yeah, thank you. That's very much what we're trying to talk about on the air these days. And I think you're right that you said a number of very, very smart things, very wise things. obviously through experience yourself, which is you spread it around. You don't depend on too much. You know, you kind of, and you make yourself available in whatever way you can. People are different in terms of what they have to offer. You offer what you've got. And I think it's also true that in a situation like this one, how much you want, it's your choice how much to participate. There's ways to participate if you want to, there, and yet people are very often live out here because they seek some solitude and some quiet and want to be.
And that's healthy and natural too, you know. Yeah, that's part of it.
I just want to remind people that this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and Aja Fawcett is sitting by, making sure that I do what I need to do and recording the show for us. We're here in our home studio with Demetra Marcus and her daughter Lily, and we're talking about living, getting out, basically, is what we're calling the show, but it's about living more self-sustainably, and maybe we should move to that, because one of the things that we are experimenting with or thinking about and trying to include other people in a discussion about is how when you live in a community, when you live in a physical community where there are other parcels and there are other people living here, some of the people here are going to want to do this kind of interactive sharing kind of thing, and some people will want to do something else. And the other thing is, it's like any family of people living near each other. There's many disagreements about what the right thing to do is, and there's too much discussion and nothing gets done sometimes. But in smaller groups, you can. And so mm-hmm. we've been exploring what sorts of things you can actually do when you're living outside of an urban setting, how you can, because you can create your own energy. How do you do that? And talking to people, like we talked to the people that own the property that you own, about the micro hydro systems, how do they work, and how can you, you know, so you get information about that. But there are additional things like producing ethanol, producing alcohol as a fuel, which is an alternative fuel that's the original fuel, and how do you get people to cooperate? People have different parcels with different ecosystems on them. Different things can be raised. Some people, like the ranch that you're on, has traditionally been a place that raises animals, mm-hmm. and some of it is for meat. And other ranches are doing other things, you know, depending on what their ecosystem is. Anyway, I'd like to hear you talk about this.
Yeah, well,
and Lily as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've worked in cooperative movements for a very long time, you know, in my 20s, working in cooperative vegetarian cafes in upstate New York, to then being part of the community acupuncture cooperative movement. And what I see is that, you know, there are these ideas and practices that can be applied anywhere, from an urban setting to a rural one, wherein people say, okay, how much energy do I have to offer? What do I like to do? You know, what am I good at? What do I need? You know, and if someone can coordinate all of those things, like, well, you guys, for example, maybe you have a lot of water. Maybe you could have several micro hydro systems on your property that actually ran year round. You know, and maybe managing, you know, just to say for an example, someone could do that. Where is your property? It would be a terrible place to maybe try to have a flock of sheep grazing.
There's up and down everywhere, so we could actually do that.
But you know, some people are going to have more infrastructure that lends more toward maybe producing, you know, vegetable production. I know that there are some folks up here who have like amazing skills, abilities, and correct parcels with water and sunlight and soil, where they can produce more food than they could ever need. But maybe they have, you know, we've done some of this trading already on our own, where we provide some meat, we provide grazing services in exchange, you know, for all kinds of things. And in fact, I do acupuncture off as well as on a sliding scale. I'm willing to do it on a trade as well, you know, which is really handy. And I think that cooperative movements succeed when everyone is really honest about what they can provide. And no one person ends up being the person that's trying to meet everyone's needs, you know, and that's usually where they fall apart. But if people are really clear about, you know, okay, I can do this, or maybe actually I can't provide these things, but I can organize what can be provided, that voluntary willingness to collaborate is all that's required.
So, Lily, you know, it strikes me that we're talking about this kind of doing it instead of waiting for the government to do what we want, just making a life here that is that way. And it strikes me that it's very much like unschooling.
Yeah, I suppose it is in a way. I mean, I think it's a little harder because, you know, as adults, you don't have to, youth to shelter behind. You know, you have to, you know, be responsible. Whereas a child, I can kind of push those off on my mom, responsibilities. But yeah, I do think it's definitely very similar in many ways.
It's I think also the challenge is from the unschooling too, is to do, as you said, Demetra, to follow the thing that you feel drawn to, the thing that you're made for. You know, don't try to make yourself into something else. Offer what you have to offer and notice what other things people have as well. Being open enough to let in what other people have to offer as well. I think that's important. So any last words of wilderness? Here's your chance, Lily. You're on the air. Lots of people are listening. No pressure. What is your wish for how things go and the world? And what would you like? What do you hope for? What do you want and hope for the world?
I'd like to work on equality a lot more and, you know, just kind of changing the situation. You know, I think younger generations right now are really getting into the whole victimizing themselves thing, and that can be very controversial. And also just kind of changing people's perception of words like feminist. You know, people see that as like a raging, man-hating thing, and it's like it's about equality. And I think it's just really important for, you know, that's what I want to do. I want people to be able to understand these things and realize that equality is at the heart of so many issues and not like, you know, what this, you know, this makes me better than you because I'm this. Like, it's not about that, you know.
So your understanding of how younger women feel about feminism is that it's a, I don't want that, angry, or that the feminists are angry and pushing stuff away instead of being...
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have friends who say, I'm an equalist, or I agree with the idea of feminism, but I don't want people to think I'm this if I identify as a feminist, so I don't. And I think it's just a lot of worry about people perceiving you as one thing if you identify as a feminist. So I think it's really about changing the way people perceive feminism.
So it's almost like the way that gender itself is being recreated, the way there's new ways to think about
all
of that.
Well, I mean, it used to be, you know, feminism equals equality for both genders, but now it's all genders. Like, you know, it's really changed mm-hmm. in that respect.
So. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
And yeah, oh, it's very complicated. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Do you think that, I mean, I'm not hanging out with as many, well, you're not hanging out with as many young people as
yeah.
some people are, but you have friends and you're mm-hmm. talking to them. Do they seem engaged to you? Do they seem like they're interested and engaged in social change?
I mean, definitely. It depends on, you know, some people are more passionate about art than they are about, you know, social change. But I definitely have friends who really, I mean, many of them have different beliefs from me. Like, some of them are, you know, very religious. And so, you know, some of our founding beliefs really differ a lot. But in the end, I think everyone, it really just wants to be able to respect everyone else. And I think that's where, you know, we're all the same.
And do you get the sense that people are doing that with each other?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for me, there's always a difference between ignorance and hate. And I think that's, you see a lot of ignorance with other people, especially from some of my friends who say things that are just, obviously they don't know a lot about this thing. And I think it's really important to make sure you're not labeling everything that could be perceived as hateful as hate, because that's how you kind of push people away from yourself. But if you're patient enough to like teach them, no, that's ignorant. But I mean, I know you're not trying to be hateful. I think that's how people change their views.
So opening it up,
yeah,
finding a way to open up the conversation instead of having the walls shut in or pushing someone away because you don't like the way they said something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Art, of course, is often at the root of social change.
Mm-hmm.
It's often
true.
The main way to get things to change is through all these forms of art,
yeah.
because it communicates faster and better and without the kind of leaking surveillance sort of stuff of social media. Just art as it gets out there is such an incredible, and then of course you're a musician and a singer,
mm-hmm.
so you
mm-hmm.
So any last words to
I would just encourage people to be imaginative and to look at what they perceive as limits to making change as maybe just simply being mental constructs. I don't think that you need to have a lot of resources or money or family or any of the things that you think you might need to make a change in your life are probably just in your mind. And if you're willing to be imaginative enough and creative enough, you can get out of a life that is limiting you if you want. You know?
So can you talk a little more about that?
I think it's easy to say, well, I have to continue living this way. It's the only way. Otherwise, I would have to do this. Yeah, you might have to do that thing, that scary thing. But having done a lot of things that were, you know, they're not really challenging compared to some of the challenges people face in the world, but were scary for me personally to move away, to choose to be a single parent, to, like, choose to leave a lot of people. I know all that stuff was very scary, and I did it anyway, and look, I didn't die. You know, like...
Well, you're also doing things that, you know, people don't... There's a kind of convenience to living in an urban center.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get addicted to convenience.
Well, but you just changed your own brake pads.
Yeah.
Somebody showed you how to do it. It took you a long time.
A generous friend taught me how, and yeah. I learned to do his skill. That's been happening over and over again. I've learned to do things that I never thought I would be able to do. And I've learned to ask for help when I run up into a wall of something I really can't do.
I think it's really important that you've had a good experience with that, because when I first moved here, I was offering to help people with certain things that had been here for a long time, and they said, well, you know, there's a culture on this ranch of independence, and if you ask for too much, people will think you're going to be dependent, and so you're supposed to be independent. And I thought, well, that's silly. You're supposed to help each other. Why wouldn't you do that? So it seems to me that you, in your own way, are opening up that conversation and showing people that it's cooperative and that you have something we can do, and I think that's really important for communities like this. I think that's a new idea that people your age and younger are bringing into communities like this.
Well, I think it's important to remember that invitation can be for fun things too.
Yeah.
Like, let's get together and have a dessert potluck. Let's get together and sing old bad music.
Yeah.
You know, like, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's have some fun while we're changing the world.
Exactly. Yes, let's have some fun while we're changing the world. That's a good idea. Give me some other examples of, well, let's talk more practically also about sustainability.
Sure.
You're in a yurt, you have a solar system, it's a small solar system.
Solar power system.
How are you?
Yeah. We have that. We have a small wind generator, and then other properties, another building on the property has a micro hydro system as well.
Oh, so you've got the three.
And but primarily it is solar power and then wood that we use to heat our home.
Yeah, my impression is that that piece of property was very well set up in terms of utilities early on. There's the water kind of goes all over the place. And also when you say a wind turbine, I think I've seen it, and it's extremely small.
Oh, it's tiny. I could hold it in my hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big ones
It's a very small little. It's like a fan. We store water from a spring that overflows in the winter.
It dries up in the summer.
Yeah, so we store rainwater for use in the summer.
Yeah. We haven't found it that difficult to switch over. It just takes some planning, and it's really nice not to have blackouts the way you do in urban centers.
Yeah.
So now we do have to wrap it up. So there. Thank you both of you for coming in. Demetra, Lily, thanks so much. I want to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to a show about getting out with Demetra Marcus and her daughter Lily, moving to the country, starting unschooling, and all those wonderful self-sustaining things. Visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, for easier extended access to our over 600 archive shows with our library card feature, free stream of this week's show, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. If you want to reach us, please do it by email. It's admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.